are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis Lubé, and we are gathered here today to join together these men, Matt and Russell, with these women, Beth and Linnea, in the bonds of secular matrimony. It is an honorable estate and not to be entered into unadvisedly or lightly, and probably shouldn't be coming to you live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on the 14th of January, 2012, to the tune of Logical Song by Supertramp. Into this secular estate, sort of like a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, which one might call the Atheist Community of Austin, and can learn more about by calling its voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visiting its website at www.atheist-community.org, these two couples present Come Now to be Joined. If anyone can show just cause why they may not be lawfully joined together or why they may not broadcast the nonprofits live every Saturday from 10:30 to 11:30 Central Time, or why listeners may not participate in the show by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com and joining the chat room, let them speak now or forever sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Awesome. I think, did you originally write that expecting Beth and Linnea to be on the show today?
Of course.
And then we threw you this amazing curveball.
I have no psychic powers.
Or topically, did you write that when they were actually getting married? However many months ago.
Yes. Yeah, that's probably it.
This is a long delayed intro. Yeah.
So yeah, the actual people involved in today's show, I'm Matt. And I'm here, and Dennis is obviously here, and Russell is here, and Schilling has rejoined us, so welcome back.
Yeah.
And it's 2012, which I guess Russell's made the joke already that there
everyone's made that goddamn joke.
Yes, yep. We're sorry.
It is obvious to the extent that, like the Y2K thing, we're going to get a few chuckleheads making that obvious joke, and then far more people will be doing that than actually giving a shit about 2012.
Three or so years ago, when people were first hearing this obscure news about the 2012 Mayan calendar, it was still possible to be an edgy atheist and say that stuff. But now that there's a fucking Roland Emmerich movie, it's not exactly news to people. I will grant you that.
You got to stay a lot closer to that mic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. And this is the mic we're sharing.
Yeah. Well, you can take mine on occasion when it's easier, because I'm hand-holding mine. Yeah, we've got to manage to get a couple of mics. We've got one that went out this morning, so there weren't four for everybody. And evidently, on the last Godless Bitches, another podcast sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, there were issues with Tracy's volume, and so we're going to take some steps to work some things out. So yeah, this is all the exact same setup as there was, you know, as we had back in September or early October when we last did a show. Which, by the way, welcome back, and thanks to the surprisingly good turnout of live listeners and people in the chat room. We had multiple weddings followed by Thanksgiving-y stuff and Christmassy stuff. We did 21 or 22 shows last year, which is more than we were doing on average when we were biweekly.
Right.
And we would have been back last week on the 3rd? No, 7th.
But we weren't.
And it's my fault entirely. I had another obligation on the 7th. Which reminds me, the ACA's got a building. We're still working on getting it prepped up and ready for everybody. And eventually the audio equipment will be moved there. So we'll be doing nonprofits from there. And we'll be able to do nonprofits even when I'm not around, which is going to be a big deal. Because while I don't have all the dates in front of me right now, I've got two events in February, plus Beth and I are moving to the south side of Austin at the end of February. Two events in March, three events in April, and I think one event in May and another one in June. And a lot of these take place over the weekend. because in order for me to go out and do debates, and several of these are debates, so the number of debates has dramatically risen this year after doing the one in Gainesville. So that is going to impact my availability on the weekend, obviously, several times over the next few months. But it's the only option because I can't keep taking multiple days off work in the middle of the week to go do events. So you'll be you may be hearing less of me on nonprofits and atheist experience this year, but there'll be more of me spread around the world like some sort of infestation. I've got I know I'm in Amarillo and Plano, and then I'll be at Imagine No Religion 2 in Kamloops, British Columbia, the big Atheist Alliance International Conference. Beth and I are planning on going to the Reason Rally. I'm hoping that other people are planning on going to the Reason Rally as well. That's in March in Washington, D.C., which backs right up to the American Atheist Convention right after that.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Busy guy.
It's good, though. It's
jet setter?
It's really been fun. I mean, it's a lot because, you know, for the most part, very rarely do I get paid for any of that. It's just, you know, as long as there's no expense to me, I'll go out and do it. That may change if the number of, you know, engagements or requests keep increasing. But, hey, it's what needs to be done. And one of my favorite things about doing these events is that, you know, we may go do a debate like in Gainesville, but we'll also have a meetup or some meet and greet stuff, so I get to talk to people. But one thing that I've found out and that I kind of stressed a little when I was in Gainesville is that there are people who one of the biggest problems within the atheist community is this lack of sense of community, this feeling of isolation and that you're alone. And so you hear about an event like the Gainesville debate, and people from, you know, this was outside of Atlanta, so there were people there from Gainesville, there were people there from Atlanta, there were people who drove from South Carolina and other places around to come to this debate, and we had a room that was supposed to fill, supposed to hold like 300, and there were, it was standing room only and out into the hallway. And a lot of these people were like, oh, I had no idea that there were any of these other groups or any of these other atheists around. I thought it was just by myself. So having the events helps connect people and build the community up more. So, did everybody enjoy their time off?
Yes. Got a lot done on the weekends.
I actually found, to my surprise, that even though this was my first year on a new job with actual benefits, I had like an extra week of vacation banked up. So I just stayed home and did nothing. We didn't even observe Christmas, really, except for some early gifts. We just watched Die Hard and played Skyrim and Legend of Zelda, respectively. Great Christmas.
Yeah, I played some Skyrim before Christmas, and I haven't been able to play much after. We did a long road trip, Beth and I, because we didn't take a honeymoon right after the wedding. I don't know what that was, but we did this big road trip to Missouri and then Tennessee and then Florida, where we swam with manatees and then drove back over. So we did kind of a Christmas honeymoon-y combo.
I'm way behind on my gaming. I just finally got around to Portal 2.
Oh, wow. Ah.
I'm Cave Johnson. We're done here.
I love that guy.
Yeah, I got it when it came out, and I played maybe 30 minutes of it. But I just actually got into it and finished it just a couple weeks ago. And it's more of the same, but I would say I was disappointed with the difficulty or lack.
Yeah. It was, I thought,
the two-player was pretty tough.
The two-player was fun, though. Anyway, this isn't a gaming show.
No.
And we're on a limited time frame today, and I don't know, I imagine there's going to be people in the chat room who are like, when are you guys going to talk about atheist stuff? So let's start talking about atheist stuff.
All right. Well, not only atheists, but other kinds of groups like to get together and talk about their common interests, like this recent Christian coalition meeting that recently happened. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It's titled, Hope Dims for an Evangelical Pick. Prominent evangelical leaders here in South Carolina and across the nation are still holding out hope that religious conservatives will coalesce around a single Republican presidential candidate rather than splinter their vote as they did in 2008. But despite fervid discussions in the next primary state and at a large gathering of religious leaders underway now in Texas, a resignation is setting in that none of the leading socially conservative candidates, Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, or Rick Perry, is likely to win the hearts of a majority of conservative voters. The reality is, there are just too many choices, said Pastor Paul Jimenez, who leads the Taylor's First Baptist Church in Taylor, South Carolina, outside of Greenville. Unless somebody pulls out, it's going to be very hard for social conservatives to rally around one candidate.
Although,
want to say something?
One point of optimism, pulling out is one of the few tactics that they actually go for.
Well, that's true.
Yep. I've actually... I used to be a conservative Republican.
Yes.
Years and years and years ago. I remember the first time Russell actually came over to do nonprofits at my place and saw the Rush Limbaugh books on the bookshelf, and he was like, "What the hell have you got these Rush Limbaugh books for?" And I was like, "Cause I was a ditto head, and
yeah,
now
I was
I've...
like, you were reading these ironically, right?"
Yeah. No.
You got better.
I got better. And while the show in the ACA, nonpartisan, and will not be endorsing any candidates, we will be, you know, talking a little bit about the issues. And I've been following the GOP primary stuff fairly regularly. I mean, one of the things that we liked, we actually finally got rid of my 18-year-old car, and the new one has XM radio. And so I can listen to CNN and MSNBC and Fox News while I'm driving around. And I actually, on that long drive, found that to be kind of enjoyable. But, yeah, I don't know quite what to make of all this. I mean, you know, while I'm certainly now I fit in the liberal Democrat category, it doesn't mean there aren't still things that I agree with Republicans or conservatives about it. You know, that I can find... There's almost no candidate that I don't agree with on something, because, you know, we are still all people. And
what do you agree with Santorum about?
Well, I said almost. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But
oxygen is good.
I'm a fiscal moron.
Both agree with that.
I'm a fiscal moron, so to the extent that I might agree with some of them on some fiscal issues, I'm probably wrong.
And when it comes to the fiscal end of it, it's much more just dog and pony show.
Yeah.
You know, and it's for good reason. You know, when they're in a debate or just trying to get votes for the primary, they're not really going to be able to go into fiscal issues with any real level of depth and have the audience understand them and be able to make that point quickly. So, you know, the economy doesn't have many talking points aside from, you know, the
create jobs, lower taxes.
Yeah. And I think that what's going on with the GOP primary race has been pretty inevitable with the Christian conservative voting bloc. Mm-hmm. Is they're so large that they had so much pull. And as more and more potential candidates realize that level of pull and realize how well they could play to it, you end up with this Republican ticket that has countless hardcore social conservatives who basically just splinter that vote, split it. And while they're all trying the hardest to court the evangelicals, they're alienating the non-evangelical Republican voters. So it's their strength has basically worked against them.
Yeah, and we saw that study last year that we talked about a couple of times where it found out that the members of the Tea Party who outwardly were yelling about the Constitution and deficits were essentially, it turned out, exactly the same demographic as the, you know, as the social conservative religious right people. And that their primary issues were still crap like abortion and suppression of gays.
I think one thing I'm, this is just kind of chucking it out there. One thing that I seem to have noticed is that the Tea Party doesn't seem to be relevant at all in this.
Yeah, they have largely shut up lately.
Yeah, it's, you know, I will occasionally see somebody, and I think some of the you know, news pundits have been talking about it a little bit as well. But the things that have gone on in these primaries that I found most interesting, both kind of relate to some of the social issues, in the sense that, you know, obviously we've got people who were formerly anti-choice or pro-choice and now are anti-choice. But it's been kind of fun to watch. It's been fun to watch them eat their own. The infighting has been a little funny, and kind of a little sad. But I've had my eyes open to how much they want to promise things that they couldn't possibly do, just partly because some of them aren't within the power of the president,
right?
And partly because there's just not support for it. So it's you know, this is not a surprise that they're saying what they think their base wants to hear. But the number of times where they just completely misrepresent the foundations of the government, and I had mentioned this to Russell to mention on last week's Atheist Experience, there was...
And I did.
And you did. I watched you. There was this incident where Gingrich had talked about the media bias against Christians and how the questions weren't being asked, like, is it right that Catholic charities are being forced to stop adopting because they don't... because the law discriminates against their religious views? And the answer to that is yes.
Well, no, it's no, and that's not what's fucking happening. Nobody has stopped the Catholic churches from running adoption agencies. What has stopped is their ability to spend taxpayer money doing
it. Yeah, yeah.
And they should be taking the Catholic Church to task, because Catholic Church, they're not poor.
I misphrased his question. His objection was that they're no longer getting, that the government will no longer fund their discrimination.
Right, but it's being made out, and they're getting a lot of support from the religious right, regardless of even those who oppose Catholicism.
Here's my thing, though. What we're talking about in this particular case is adoption services.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Catholic Church won't adopt to same-sex couples. And if the law of the land is such that you cannot discriminate, then I don't think Catholic churches should be allowed to run adoption services, even if they don't take public funds.
But that's not what the law says in Illinois.
Yeah, but the point was that they were discussing a... well, I don't have the story in front of me.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I mean, the context of that was that Rick Perry was upset that gay people might be allowed to adopt people, and then he said nobody asks if anybody nobody looks at the other side of the question, which is if we allow gay people to adopt, then will we eventually come to the point where we don't let the Catholic Church take in public money for offering adoption services because they discriminate.
Right. The government has taken a non-discriminatory practice for their distribution of funds. That's completely different from a law saying that you can't discriminate. It's saying that the government's not going to discriminate and their money is not going to discriminate.
Right.
And what the Catholic Church has said is, well, fuck giving these kids homes. We're not going to do it on our dime.
Yeah. That is a huge part of it, and that we've actually discussed before. My point is about what I think the law should be. And if the law is such that you're not allowed to discriminate about, when we're talking about the placement of children, if that's the law, then I don't think that any organization should be allowed to do that, even if they're not taking public funds. This isn't about, there are certain freedoms within the Catholic, within freedom of religion. They still get to practice everything else. But they don't get to place a child. They shouldn't be in the business of placing children if they're going to do so only within the framework of their religious beliefs. Because if you allow that, then no matter how ridiculous their placement processes are, you have to continue to allow it. And so, you know, it's like going back to what Dawkins has said, that children aren't Catholic children. They're children of Catholic parents or whatever. And I have a concern about an organization that is placing children who may or may not have any religious beliefs or may or may not have any position on whether or not they'd like to be placed with a same-sex couple, saying, no, we're not taking government funds, so we can go ahead and be bigots. You can be bigots, and you can do it without government funds, but I don't think you should be allowed to impose that upon the children who need to be placed somewhere.
I agree ideologically, but the law is nowhere near where it needs to be for that to happen.
Well, there's private adoption and public adoption. If a birth mother is directly giving her child to a Catholic orphanage for it to be placed, I mean, that's completely different than getting a child from foster care from CPS.
My wife came over to correct me. I love that. But I agree, and I agree both with what Schilling said, that the law's not there yet. I'm talking ideologically about what I think it should be. But also, I think the birth mother has the right to directly give it to a couple, provided that couple meets the requirements for adopting. I'm not necessarily sure I favor them being able to give it to whoever the hell they want. And also, I don't think I favor them being able to give it to whatever agency they want. Because, for example, if the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan start an adoption service where they are taking the children of unwed mothers and specifically placing them in nothing but these extremely racist, bigoted, hateful where these homes where kids are going to simply be indoctrinated.
But I mean, you wouldn't have a legal problem with a biological parent who is a member of the Ku Klux Klan raising their own child, or maybe giving it to their bigoted cousin to raise or something like that. So, I mean, if it's a private transaction between individuals, I'm not sure that has any bearing on what the government is doing here.
Well, I think this stems from my view that we have a larger responsibility to the other members of our society, including children. And so in much the same way that we would step in if children were in a home that was unsafe, I've watched hoarding and stuff like that where homes are unsafe, I agree that we probably shouldn't be doing it based on religious differences or simple ideological differences, but if we had some demonstration that this is an environment that is not good for kids, then I think you can object no matter how the adoption went down.
But I think that even you know, however decades, centuries, however long it would take for there to be a law against discriminating in that fashion, as you mentioned, I think what we would just see is a change in the nature of the business. They wouldn't be running adoption agencies. What they would be running is sort of a middleman, because parents can still directly adopt another couple. So what you'll see is these organizations that will find you the parents that fit your criteria, and then you can adopt to them directly.
Child brokers.
Essentially. And really, I don't see anything wrong with that at the base of it.
But you agree that none of them should be getting government funding.
Correct. But yeah, you would just see a change in it. So the idea of the Catholics being unable to have discriminatory adoption policies, regardless of what the law says, they're going to be able to do it.
I just view it as another pro-choice issue. Just as a woman can choose to have an abortion or she can choose to parent unless she's extremely unfit, I think she should be able to direct who her child goes to unless they're extremely unfit.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree. I mean, I realize that the way I phrase some things in talking about how this went down could have been potentially very dangerous. If the laws were written as sloppily as I put them, it could lead to the equivalent of somebody sweeping in and taking children of atheist parents away from them and things like that. That's not anywhere near.
Well, that's why people spend 10 years in law school.
Yeah, that's not anywhere near what I'm advocating. I'm talking about yeah, there would have to be some demonstration of harm. There would have to be some demonstration of fitness. My concern is that we make sure that we are placing... there are plenty of children out there that need homes, and there are homes that are willing to take them. And in many cases, there are fit homes that just aren't allowed to, or where the hoops they've had to jump through are so big that it's very difficult. And I don't think we're ever going to get the law to the point that I'd like it. But going back to kind of how this all started with Gingrich's thing about, you know, public funds, and his essential claim was that the government is discriminating against these people's religious beliefs by not giving them public funds. And he's absolutely correct. The government is discriminating, and they're discriminating fairly because we do not provide public funds to support your religious bigotry. It just doesn't, that can't happen right now. And I think there are certainly improvements that should be made. It's good enough for now, but to twist that and spin it as this, both of the media's reporting on it as an anti-Christian, and Perry's gone off about Obama's war on Christianity, which I just giggle every time Perry says that because it's absurd. I mean, I supported Obama in 2008. I drank some of the Hope Change Kool-Aid, and I don't really know what my complete opinion of the man is at this point, because he's disappointed on a number of things. He's, you know, there are promises that he's failed to keep. But
in fairness to him, he did actually wind up repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and hasn't pushed any new crazy religious motivated stuff, although I'm also very disappointed that he's maintained the
faith-based initiatives.
What is that? There's no way to turn up the gain on this microphone because I'm like right on it.
Well, you just stay within 2-3 inches. We've been doing this show for years. It's always the same, and you turn.
I'm not sure if you've noticed, Russell. You get 2 or 3 inches from the microphone, and then you turn to Mac and talk away from the microphone.
Okay.
The microphone.
It's because we haven't done the show in 3 months.
Yeah, and it's
and
also
I'm not a godless bitch, so I don't get to participate in other fine events here.
I was a godless bitch for about 5 minutes on one show. On the microphone front, we're replacing these with lapel mics that will be constantly fixed in a position.
Awesome.
And usually I do have a microphone right near my face, except right now we're having to turn it back and forth between me and Dennis because one mic is broken.
All right. So enough of on the technical issues front.
Okay.
So anyway, I've had a lot of fun watching the primaries. I have, you know, I'm convinced right now that it looks like Romney is fairly unstoppable. I don't have any really strong opinions about any of the individual candidates, and I couldn't support them even if I wanted to. But it's been an interesting exercise for me because I've been watching this thinking.
But I'm sorry. And to the people who are going to write in about Ron Paul, none of us particularly like Ron Paul. Not an atheist position. It's just we're not going to talk him up. Sorry, go on.
That was entirely unnecessary, but let's go.
It's just because we get so much fucking mail about fucking Ron Paul.
Yeah. No, I don't know what I was saying. Anyway, no, it's been a fun exercise for me because I'm trying to put my old hat back on and look at these guys and say, if I still believed what I used to believe, which of these guys would I support? And I still don't know.
Right.
And I think that's indicative of what's going on and why the vote says split. It's been a bit of fun, and I'm kind of interested in how it turns out, obviously, since, you know, we're going to have a presidential race here this year.
Yeah. Well, lots of stuff happened while we were away.
Mm.
I mean, this whole you know, Occupy movement got started.
I haven't... I'm no expert on the Occupy movement.
Yeah, and it doesn't have any... I don't detect much in the way of religious overtones to the thing, so there's really not much for us to say about it on this show, I suppose.
Yeah,
I pay attention to it, but I'm going to pass on talking about it here.
By the way, one thing that's going to happen next Saturday, the 21st, which will be the next episode of the Nonprofits, we're going to have a representative of the National Atheist Party on. They've gotten some press lately, and I had spoken to them before. We're going to have them on and ask questions, and I have lots of questions, so I'm going to save that for next week because that should make for an interesting show.
Not to mention a show that's dicey as fuck, given ACA's to have a party come on to the show, it's going to be very delicately addressed.
Well, the thing is, I'll save it for next week. It certainly won't be any endorsement of any party or any partisan stuff at all, because I don't know what the hell I think about them either. Which is why I'm kind of interested in having the conversation. But to things that have happened recently, Jessica Ahlquist, who's...
Oh, yeah.
I have that story, if you want.
The high schooler from Cranston, who we've had on the show in the past when she first brought her lawsuit. Russell, you want to do the reminders and story bit?
Sure. And she, I want to say, when we talked to her, she was very well-spoken and had a really solid grasp of the issues for a high school kid.
We were all impressed.
For many adults, too. And I really enjoyed talking to her. And somewhere I have I have her on one of these tabs. Let's see.
You've got a tab running for her. She can't even drink yet. So the nuts and bolts of it is that there was this school prayer hanging at her high school. And
the court rules that plaintiff Jessica Ahlquist has standing in this matter and rules in her favor on the merits of this dispute. This was for a very, very sectarian prayer that was posted in her public high school. The court orders the immediate removal of the prayer mural from the auditorium at Cranston West. The court refrains from second-guessing the expressed motives of the committee members, but nonetheless must point out that tradition is a murky and dangerous bog. Oh, nicely said. While all agree that some traditions should be honored, others must be put to rest as our national values and notions of tolerance and diversity evolve. At any rate, no amount of history and tradition can cure a constitutional infraction. The court concludes that Cranston's purposes in installing and more recently voting to retain the prayer mural are clearly not secular. Plaintiff is clearly an articulate and courageous young woman who took a brave stand, particularly in light of the hostile response she has received from her community. And speaking of the hostile response that she has received from her community, here's a short collection of stuff that people have written to and about her.
A collection of Christian love.
Yeah. Do you want to read it, Dennis? Gotten to talk.
Sure.
In a bit.
Why not? Yeah. Oh man, I don't know if I can read this. It's. Why don't we just start moving students that people don't like? Teachers that people don't like. It's a freaking banner. It's been how long and one person is going to complain? Get a life. I hope people start complaining about this one particular person and how ugly they are, and maybe they can get them removed. It's
of
like
she's a
one
girl, so of
said,
course
if you don't like it, don't look at it.
She's a girl, so of course the criticism has to include something about the way she looks.
Right. May that little evil atheist teenage girl and that judge burn in hell. Yeah, well, I want the immediate removal of all atheists from the school. How about that? She just destroyed a piece of Cranston West's history. Hope you're happy. And it goes on and on. And it gets worse and worse.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there
pretty ugly.
There were, outright threats, and her home address was posted. And, of course, Jessica was like, hey, I've got younger siblings, and I'm worried about them. And I was like, I'm worried about all of you when it gets to this point. But one of the things that I found was I take some amusement in this because there's a certain subset of the Christian population, the jingoistic Christian population, that are just completely fucking stupid and have no idea. And so, of course, right off the bat, you got these things about, well, this is one nation under God. This is our history. Don't you dare change it. People not realizing that this, you know, national motto changed in the 50s because, well, they're, you know, not taught that in school.
I wonder why.
And so it's, you know, this is one nation under God, and in God we trust. And here's a poll that shows that most people believe in God. So the we're in a majority rules society, you know, suck it, bitch, and all this other stuff.
So fractally wrong, you don't know where to start.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it kind of springs from also things that I saw during the GOP primaries where these ideas are being touted from the people running for office as well. Not the simplistic claim that this has always been, you know, one nation under God, but this idea that this is a Christian nation founded on Christian principles, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just all wrong. It's not even close. And even if it were true, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Just like it doesn't matter that the founders, you know, kept slaves and weren't opposed to slavery. We can change those things. And in fact, if we hadn't changed some of those things, this would not be the country that it is.
Right.
Although we still need to change quite a few more things.
Doesn't matter if we're a Christian nation. We have a constitution.
Yeah. And it's like, it's almost like, it would be like the Christians who want to ignore the Old Testament and cite the New Testament. Yeah. So, as if this is the way it always was, you know, turn the other cheek. It's turn the other cheek. It's turn the other cheek. Ha ha ha. That's our history. No, your history is endorsing slavery and misogyny, et cetera. Yeah. And eye for an eye and tooth for, oh, well, that's Old Testament stuff.
It's turn the other cheek in one breath and then, you're going to burn in hell.
Well, the thing is, I think what it is that if you turn the other cheek, that gets you in the position to where you've got more leverage for the slap that's coming in return. But
talk about obeying the letter of the law.
Yeah. So just on a personal level, and I've already told her this twice. We were all really impressed when Jessica came on talk, and everybody's been impressed by her. She spoke at a number of events. Even the judge commented on how she was
an articulate,
courageous individual. I absolutely adore her and what she has done, and the same goes for Damon Fowler and some of the others that, you know, the next generation of skeptic atheists who are actually already deeply involved in activism, and it makes me much more optimistic about what's likely to happen in the future, because, you know, we're not going to be doing this forever. But
well, in addition to that, I think that it demonstrates to a large degree not just the generational thing as far as those kids go, but of how well things have gone, like Freedom From Religion Foundation and other similar resources, and how well it's gone getting the message out that these resources exist and putting kids in touch with them. Because I, you know, back when I was in school, for example, there were things that people had complaints about, but no one knew what the hell do you do. You know, you're not going to sue them yourself, so you're just in an awkward position. So I think it's great that a lot of these organizations that do offer resources and, you know, help you navigate all the bureaucracy to do something in the appropriate fashion are getting the press that they need.
We stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I wouldn't have known about Frame for Religion Foundation or the ACLU or anything, you know, what exactly is the process. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that the internet has changed the world and the way the world works.
Right. Expertise is up there on the web for everyone to look at.
And information is more freely available. And if there's, you know, education is, you know, paramount, but access to information just runs hand in hand with that. On another note, I'm going to give the briefest rundown of this that I possibly can, because I just want to mention this. I saw a post over my Christmas break while I was traveling around you know, and swimming with manatees, which, by the way, is one of the most awesome things ever. It really is. I went because this is something Beth had always wanted to do, and I was like, yeah, sounds like fun. I have to say it was, I mean, it wasn't life-changing, it wasn't spiritual, but I can understand how some people might have that kind of experience in there doing it. It was just amazing. The manatees, as it turns out, in a wetsuit, I'm easily confused for a manatee by other manatees. And so that made my adventure more fun. As I was going around there, I fell behind on email, I fell behind on blog posts and everything, but I did see a blog that was like, oh, look, there's another end of the year, who was the best atheist of the year thing poll, and it has no women on it. And, well, yeah, Russell can pass that one around. So I saw that post. I did not click the link to the poll in question. I was just like, yeah, that happens all the time. That sucks. And so let's keep going. So I get back from vacation and I get an email that says from somebody that's like, how do you feel about being nominated for this Atheist of the Year award thingy? And what do you think of the other nominees? And I quickly sent an email back and I was like, what award are you talking about? And as it turns out, examiner.com, which is like an independent, anybody can write for online news and editorial source. One of the guys from that site had tried to do an Atheist of the Year for 2011. And I looked at it, and the methodology was crap. I mean, he had reasons for this, which I'll get to. But I looked at it, and I was like, whatever. Because what he'd done was he'd asked for nominees, and then he picked the top five of the nominees that were submitted. Uh-huh. And then he wrote a page on each one of the five and then opened it up to where the winner would be selected by which article was linked to most often in Facebook and Twitter. Now, first of all, opening up to nominees within your select fairly small reader base, that's a bad way to start. Then self-selecting, you picking the top five that you think deserve to be in there is the next problem. And then the third problem is that it becomes kind of this popularity contest type thing. Well, the five were Hemant Mehta, Dave Silverman, me, George Takei, and Ricky Gervais.
Wow. Now, that's quite an array.
I noticed, of course, that there's no women in there. Some people were saying there's no people of color. I think Hemant qualifies, as a non-traditional Caucasian white male thing. So at least we got some. But I didn't care about that. It was a concern. And I just looked at that, and I was like, oh, well, if it comes down to Twitter stuff, Ricky Gervais is going to win the second somebody finds out about this. And so I just ignored it and went back to trying to catch up on hundreds of posts and emails. Well, as it turns out, I won.
Well, congratulations.
No. Dave Silverman decided to have a bit of fun with it and kind of like posted something nasty on Twitter about me and Hemant that we kill puppies when we win things and so people shouldn't vote for us. And that spawned some votes. And then Dave was saying, there's only one day left to vote. And I was like, well, I'll link to you if you link to me. So we're linking to each other and everything. And the votes come in, and then I get the award, and they, let me know. And so I write this little acceptance speech. And I'm thinking this is all in good fun. Because at this point, I had no idea that there was this behind-the-scenes absurdity going on. And what had happened was, this was, of course, the same end of the year thing that I had originally read about and didn't realize. And so the whole time this is going on, I'm oblivious to the fact that there's this whole other discussion being taken place where the person who put the poll together had been challenged on the fact that there weren't women on this. Mm-hmm. And he made what is probably one of the stupidest mistakes I've ever seen by saying that he didn't want to include any token women and thought about including Neil deGrasse Tyson, but didn't want him to be the token black guy. And I was like, do you not understand? Token Okay, I realize that, you know, words don't have magical power, and, you know, you didn't say the N-word or whatever, but things like token and uppity, those are words you probably don't want to be using when you're talking about these sorts of things.
No, I quite disagree.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Now, I read Greta's attack on him, and then his response on that, and then her analysis of it, and essentially, his use of the word tokenism, I don't find that problematic, because he was saying he wanted to avoid tokenism. And tokenism can be taken in a number of different ways. There are nuances to the meaning.
Yeah, I think you're getting ready to make the same point.
Greta and many others have decided to take a very narrow and particular definition of tokenism and adjust all of the context to fit that one word. And reading what he was saying, I read his statement as, I didn't want to include a woman just for the sake of including a woman. I just wanted to narrow it down to the top five and let that be that.
Yeah. When I read what he wrote about it, I ended up turning down the award and didn't really care. I went, you know, never thought I was going to win, didn't really care about an internet, you know, popularity poll or anything else. But my take on this was when I read I figured out what he was trying to say. And I think that if he'd have phrased it differently, there wouldn't have been any problem at all. Because what he was trying to say, as far as I can tell, is that he put out a call for nominees. And when he went through the list of nominees, there were more nominations for these people than there were for these people. And he didn't, you know, pool B, let's say.
Yeah.
And he didn't, when he put together his top five, didn't want to just go grabbing from pool B
arbitrary people
just so that he would have a woman in the top five. But he used the word token to describe
it. I don't think that token is an inappropriate word for that, because it can be putting someone in regardless of qualifications, but it can also be lowering the bar a bit or adjusting qualification taken into account to include a category.
I'm not objecting strictly to the use of the word.
Okay.
What I'm saying, first of all, is that there's a way to explain this, and if he'd avoided that word, which is like a red flag.
Yeah.
Because at this point, my feminist friends are talking about problem A in language A, and he's talking about subject B. And so there's a disconnect in the communication. And I think all of them could have easily understood, hey, we had these nominees and there was, you know, for whatever reason, there were more nominations for men than there were for women, which is a demonstration of the, you know, the bias that already exists, which is not his fault. It's not his fault that this bias exists. And if he'd have simply said, I honored what nominees I've got, and in the future I hope to change the methodology so that, you know, we get a much more diverse pool where we can avoid as much of the bias as possible, or, you know, frankly, I'll just pick out the five that I thought were most influential, and of these five you can vote for one. I don't know why we're doing this voting thing anyway. I don't know why we're trying to pick a person of the year within, you know, a movement. He had to name the award the Hitchy and remove Christopher Hitchens because there's no way that Hitchens wasn't going to win. but, you know, I like the fact that we honor the people who do things. But when I look at what I did last year, I mean, this was nothing but a little quickie popularity, who can get the most Facebook reposts on the last day. Because when you really want to talk about what atheists did things in 2011, I put Jessica Ahlquist way up there. I put Dave Silverman higher than myself, surely. I mean, you know, what he's done with American Atheists in the last year is more than probably what I've done, you know, from the ACA and in the various debates and stuff. P.G. Myers would always win as just a fountain of information. You know, the people with larger audiences that are able to reach more people, those are much more compelling wins. And also, you know, I mean, Jen McCrate over at Black Hack did a, you know, most influential female atheist of 2011. And, you know, of course, Rebecca won and Greta got second. And that to me is, is not necessarily a foregone conclusion, but it's as close as you're going to come when you're limiting it to that pool.
Godless bitches collectively took 10th.
Yes, and Jessica Alquist was on that list too.
Well, and particularly insofar as, you know, people who read Jen McCrate, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be very familiar with and probably reading Rebecca Watson and Greta Christina. Like,
yeah, they're sharing it's a very shared
pool, so it's naturally going to be amongst them.
But the thing is, they all had fun with that too. When Rebecca ended up winning, I saw Rebecca's post where she not only said some crazy funny shit and kept it up through the comments, kept pretending that Examiner.com was the Examiner, and she sent me a tweet right after she made the post, and she's like, "Hey Matt, I went and lied about you," because she talked about how I sent feminazi type person up to accept my award for me and all this other stuff. My thing about the token thing is that this is about raising people's awareness about how they're going to communicate. We already have a problem within the atheist community, within the skeptic community, just in the community in general, around the world, in any category, almost, except for maybe just the feminist category, we have this problem where people aren't able to understand privilege. They're not able to recognize necessarily their own privilege often enough, and they don't know how to communicate with the people who are pointing out the problems, and often the people who are pointing out the problems don't know how to communicate to the people
I think you used a key word there, because there are a handful of these liberal buzzwords now that are being thrown around, and sometimes with validity, sometimes they're being thrown around because they are the buzzwords.
Yeah.
And I'd say probably the top three are misogyny, entitled, and privilege. Misogyny is a particular thing. Being kind of a cad or, you know, making an ass of yourself to a woman is not misogyny. Coming to a different conclusion on an issue is not necessarily misogyny,
even if it
does involve problems communicating between genders or intergender relations. That's not necessarily an incidence of misogyny.
Do you think that saying something contemptuous of gay people is homophobia?
Not necessarily.
See, I understand the distinction you're trying to make. Don't necessarily agree, because I think in much the same way that you're trying to say that they're using these terms overly broad, and I think it could be argued that you're trying to use the term overly narrow.
What I'm seeing, though, is particularly from just sort of secondary responders, people who are commenting or arguments that one gets into forums and things like that, those words are thrown around so frequently and so like they are certainly buzzwords, regardless of how validly they're being used. And that causes a problem in the communication, because then even valid uses of the word, when someone points out privilege that is there, anyone who's not already on that side of the fence is going to see those buzzwords. It's sort of like, you know, if there was an activist judge and you read an article bitching about the activist judge, a lot of people wouldn't take this story very seriously because it uses the phrase activist judge. Those words are getting such a broad connotation that they're hampering what could be a much more productive dialogue.
As the token woman, I think misogyny is bandied about a bit too frequently. Misogyny is hatred of women. I think sexist is a lot better term for a lot of the things that have happened.
Maybe, but yeah. Even sexist, I think that's an attitudinal thing, or it should be an attitudinal thing of a pattern of behavior or something like that. A particular action that's a bit thoughtless, or something that one doesn't really realize what it says to women or to men. A lot of these issues, I think, are nuances of gender relations that aren't necessarily expressions of sexism.
I think a lot of it also is just not just gender relations, but social relations in general.
See, actually,
there are a lot of very awkward people in our movement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think that the use of the word tokenism was this guy's particular problem in this case, because it wasn't just that he said a word that could be taken two ways. It was that in using that word, he explicitly said that none of the women who were submitted to me were worthy of being on my top five list. And that is where he actually got into trouble. Because I have seen, like, a lot of speeches going down this year. I think the Texas Free Thought Convention was was it the CFI meeting? No, the JREF meeting, where there were a whole lot of women speakers who I thought in many cases did better jobs than their male counterparts. And I include Greta Christina for her, I'm angry speech.
The thing is, I don't know what his criteria were. Like, yeah. George Takei, I didn't even know the man was an atheist.
He hasn't even been active in atheism this year. He said some great stuff about gay people because he's a gay activist.
Yeah, how does he get on the list, but Christina doesn't?
The list was a bit odd. Like, there are some choices there that strike me as strange. But I don't think that he was saying that no women were worthy to be on my top five list. I think he was saying that a woman didn't make the cut this year. But even setting aside some of his choices, like, I think Gervais and Takei were just weird choices, given...
I can understand Ricky a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. He's famous and he's an atheist, but...
Which brings attention.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes that's enough. It's like, you know, we're all aware that, like, Brad and Angelina are atheists. General public is not so much aware of that. If they were to make a more outspoken statement, that could have a huge impact.
Right. But if that's the criteria, what woman would warrant being on the list?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that.
I don't know
that's
many.
One of many criteria.
Many people who aren't really into atheism who know who Jessica Alquist is, who know who Annie Gaylor is. But regardless of that content, I would say that, you know, if you're going to rank or, you know, come up with these lists, you tend to end up with a pool of about 10 that are pretty much equally good, and you're really splitting hairs to try to get a 5. So I don't see a big problem that a woman didn't particularly make the cut, so to speak, because the differentiation is so slight.
I think that if he had responded to Greta's criticism by saying, you know, it does look a little odd that in a list of 5, there were not any women on there, and I think that I will perhaps think about that more in future things, it would have ended right there. He wouldn't even have had to, had to go back and tinker with the past poll. Matt would have taken the award. I think a lot of the women bloggers would have said, "Okay, that was a reasonable response."
Sort of, but there was more to their statements than that. There was, if there is not a woman in the top 5, you do have a problem. I think that is a fucking quota. There, like that, to me. Is an advocacy
I don't
of a mild tokenism of saying, when she did say you have to take gender into account when you make up these awards and you can't be gender neutral, don't worry your little head about that, you're just not capable, assume sexism and give women a preferential treatment. And I think that I oppose that, but between her articulation,
give them a preferential treatment by having any.
No, give them preferential treatment by taking their gender into consideration for the award. I highly doubt that, for example, nominating Matt, he really considered Matt's balls. Like, I don't think that his gender necessarily came into the equation. But the way he articulated his distaste for preferential treatment, and then the way Greta responded, it makes the lack of communication and the problems there pretty significant. Because when I read Greta's response, it's saying, take gender into account when it's a woman, give women preferential treatment, because there is sexism somewhere out there and you cannot be gender neutral. And I don't think it's the height of absurdity, but I sure shit don't agree with the idea.
I think she's right.
I don't... If there are going to be criteria... for a list, and no women happen to fit that criteria at the time, that's fine. If there's criteria for, say, some physical job, you need to be able to lift 100 pounds or something, and no women who try out can do that, that's fine. If there's just general popularity contest and, you know, no women make these lists of atheists who are blogging or atheists who are doing things over and over again, despite the fact that we've got women out there like Greta, like Rebecca, like Jessica Ahlquist, it kind of makes you wonder whether there is some bias or not.
Maybe, but
hang on, because I've been waiting for 10 minutes now. First of all, I think it's interesting that my wife actually agreed with Schilling on something. So, I mean, let's call Guinness. But the thing is, if you make a list of whatever, and by the way, I'll go back to saying that I don't think we need these types of things, and I wish we'd stop having these little popularity contests and polls and things where the criteria is just so seemingly arbitrary. But if you make a list of the top five atheist authors, there may not be any women on that list. There may not.
Well, if it's all time, sure, shit not.
But even in the last couple of years, yeah, whatever, there may not be anyone on the list. That doesn't make the list sexist. It doesn't mean there's a problem with the list. It means that the list is reflective of another potential problem. I'm not saying that it's necessarily a reflection of a real problem, but a potential problem. It may turn out to be the fact that the five best atheist authors in this particular span of time all happen to be men.
Right.
Now, I'd like to think that the potential problem that those sorts of lists indicate is one that is fixable. Not so that we necessarily have 2.5 men and 2.5 women on a list of top five, nor do I think that we should be operating towards quotas. But I think when these lists come out, it is in all of our best interest to point out that sometimes the list is problematic. In this case, the list was problematic for a number of reasons, his particular methodology and everything else. And this was just a bullshit little internet popularity contest. That's not the case with a lot of these other lists where they're, you know, nominating and they're taking nominations from a much larger pool, or an individual specifically selected the top 10 to vote on or whatever else. The important thing is that we recognize that any lack of diversity in the list itself doesn't necessarily mean it's the fault of the list maker,
right,
because that can be reflective of a larger problem in society where women are underrepresented in something because of particular prejudices. It may be that they're underrepresented for valid reasons in some cases, like, you know, Beth's talking about, you know, they're underrepresented in the NFL.
Right.
There's not a lot of women in the NFL. Should there be more women? Well, I don't know. As soon as we find, you know, I think it should be open to women who could actually do that. I don't care. I don't care what your genitalia is, was, or maybe in the future with respect to whether or not you can do a task. If it turns out you're the best fucking linebacker, you're the best fucking linebacker. And they would be stupid not to pay you millions. So I'm all in favor of opening that stuff up. But we need to recognize that just because there's not an equitably diverse field doesn't necessarily mean that the person who put together the field is a problem, and doesn't mean that there's necessarily a problem that it's reflecting. But we need to recognize that quite often that is the case, that we were talking about throughout the most recent epoch of humanity, that there is privilege and that there is a male-dominated culture, and that there are these sort of normative behaviors that put certain people in different minority categories at risk of being underrepresented when they could be underrepresented when they could be represented much more equally, and that we may all benefit from that.
Right.
You know.
Well, I would like to just throw in here. I disagree with you in terms of not seeing worth for these lists. Like, it's a fucking silly internet poll, but if you consider what happened, you guys linked each other back and forth and
sure,
spread your audiences. And there might be people who will go there because of David Silverman's link and say, oh, who's this Hermit Meta guy? Who's this Dillahunty guy, etc. And I think that it's good because it gets, you know, it's just having a bit of fun. Like the way that you and David Silverman had this back and forth, it was just fun. Don't put any weight into these lists.
Yeah.
But I think they're useful in terms of exposure and getting getting people of like interest to find something else that fits their interest.
My only comment on that is that I agree, but I think that there may be better ways to do this sharing of exposure and exchanging audiences without having to have it be a, you know, I'm the super cool winner of the day and stirring up controversy on the side.
Well, the controversy, I think, is completely independent. You'll get controversy from any fucking article. You know, it's hit and miss. But year-end poll shit, people eat that up. And so taking advantage of that,
it's like obligatory. Everybody's got an end of, we didn't do an end of the year list because we weren't here at the end of the year.
Yeah, but it's good for getting the word out. It's very practical.
But comparing it to best-selling authors and football players, there's a little bit of a difference there, because with both of those things there are objective measures. Football players, you can count, you know, who enables the most points in some way, and books you can just talk sales. When you're dealing with an internet popularity contest like this, and I agree that it doesn't really matter all that much in the big picture, but if there's no women on the list because not enough people are just aware of them, and then that can essentially become a self-perpetuating problem, because if guys who make lists deliberately don't put Greta Christina and like highlight her speeches, then she's never going to get into one of those lists, even if she is like essentially deserving. And somebody who comes up with this kind of contest that manages to drum up some popularity on Facebook or whatever, potentially could raise awareness of these issues and chooses not to, and maybe he had good reasons for that, but just acknowledging that, oh yeah, maybe I could do something like that, instead of saying, well, I don't really want to include any women because I don't feel like any of them were good enough to get on this list,
well,
is the wrong approach.
One, you have a bit of a cart horse thing there of... It's a year-end list over what's happened over the last year. Even if he chose to use that opportunity to bring a new audience,
but
to someone
George
that he
Takei
enjoys.
On there.
Yeah, and that's silly, but he fit whatever weird criteria had it. But even if he had said, he had picked some female blogger out there who's not getting enough notoriety, and then awarding her for how well she's done previously when he's just starting to, you know, try to bring her a new audience. It's not the responsibility of someone who's doing a year-end list to do any of that. He can do plenty of that in the articles that he writes throughout the year. There are, like, he has an outlet. He has this blog that he's running. He can bring, you know, attention to whomever he wants to. And these people can earn attention through any number of ways. And I would think that a year-end poll is the least appropriate, perhaps, of trying to bring an audience.
I don't know why everybody's looking at me.
You took my
microphone.
You're standing here holding my microphone. I thought you had something to say. So really quickly on this, number one, I think what I'd like to see more often than the here's the best X of 2011 is here are the top 10 X of 2011 that you probably weren't aware of but should be.
What I'd like to see is split up little lists that include, like, basically have a number of different categories and have that be a category. You could have some, you know, weird categories, like, you know, for publicity stunt type things, like your
animated short of the year
or boob quake or, you know, whatever little social thing didn't carry a lot of intellectual weight, but was a fun time and got a bit of a message out. Breaking it up that way, I think, would be a much better way to do it and to laud efforts a bit more than individuals.
So I say we should have a top 10 list for top 10 lists and include the list of all lists that don't include this one.
So in the spirit of down with best things of 2011, I'm going to nominate everybody in this room except for Schilling, because he wasn't here in 2011, for an award for most important nonprofit of 2011. So I won't nominate anybody who's not in this room because they're not here. We'll vote, and if we all vote for ourselves, we can declare it a draw. So
what that means is I declare the winner.
You don't get to vote.
So we all vote, and I'm just not nominated.
Don't get me wrong. I'm happy you're back. But you don't get to fucking vote yet.
Now,
all right. So we're
related to this topic. There's the Nasrallah letter.
I don't know what you're talking
Mallory
about.
Mallory Nasrallah, she wrote an open letter that has caused quite its own controversy.
Is that Penn's friend? Yeah, they already talked about it on GB, and we're already over an hour, so okay. I'm not gonna do that here. So, by way of updates, I realize this is kind of like welcome to 2012, same as 2011, just as disorganized, just as many technical problems. We see the return of Schilling today, and none of us actually did any. Well, Russell and Dennis did some real work for the show by gathering stuff, but
in the middle of the show,
yeah. and I got out of bed because I've been sick for 2 days, just like 15 minutes before the show started, or 45 minutes. But so the plan is to continue on the weekly schedule, but we already know there are going to be weeks where it's just canceled, and I realize that's kind of frustrating for people. And I certainly realize that the long period of time where we had no shows, we probably alienated a good chunk of the audience, and maybe some of them will come back. I hope they will. There are some changes that we're going to make in 2012, not because it's 2012, because I don't really care what the calendar year is. But there's, you know, obviously the moving and the technical changes. But what I'd like to do is, since this caused some stir, is if you're going to email nonprofits, which you can email nonprofits, radio at atheist-community.org. And there's another email address, which I've forgotten.
Oops.
But anyway, include NPR in the subject line so that we get it.
Yeah.
And one thing that I'd like to do is maybe I don't want to start another lengthy discussion about, you know, who should or shouldn't have been on a list. But in keeping with that idea that I had of atheists and secularists who did things in 2011 that more people should have been aware of, if you've got a suggestion for that, send that in. And it, you know, if nothing else, we should be able to use this forum to help connect some of those audiences, to help connect some of those individuals and some of those groups. I've got a backlog of email. I know there are people who asked for specific things to be mentioned, events that are coming up. I will try to get a good list together. If you've got an event coming up, if you've got a group that you'd like to see promoted, you know, whether you're having a debate or a convention, anything along those lines, send it in, put NPR, you know, in the subject line, and, you know, maybe for publication or whatever, so that we know that it's an announcement that you want to go out. And we'll do a better job, maybe have a little segment at the end of the show where we, here's what's coming up in the next month, you know, type thing. So that I don't have to keep reminding everybody that Reason Rally is in March and Imagine No Religion 2 is in May. And the SSA convention is in June, I think. So there's a lot going on right now, news-wise, that we simply don't have time to get to. Next week, we're going to have a representative from the National Atheist Party on here. And I plan to grill him with all kinds of questions so I can figure out what the hell I think about the National Atheist Party. And if you've got particular questions that you'd like to see asked, you can email those in as well to radio at atheist-community.org. Anybody have any other special announcement-y type things they want to get out? Nobody's
not really.
Nobody's doing anything. You're not having any fun.
Oh, well. I just don't want to invite the audience.
Yeah. You're not invited to my special super secret fun. All right. Well, Dennis, take us out of here.
All right. Well, my outro is really, you know, doesn't really work without all the people here and so far from the actual events.
I do.
And, of course, now I'm feeling like this big fifth wheel, you know, so. So I'll just leave with a quote that I found on Why Won't God Heal Amputees. This was in a discussion about what would you do with God's powers? The power of the Christian God? How restricting. I can't heal terminally ill patients, disabled people, or amputees. I can't reward good people or punish the wicked until after they die. I can't answer prayers to a degree any more reliable than random chance. I can't feed the starving. I can't stop suffering. I can't convince my children to obey me, or even the majority of them to believe in me. I can't stop my children from killing each other over me. I can't communicate clearly with my children. The power of the Christian God? I might as well be imaginary. And so we'll see you next week. And we leave you with Supertramp.